Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. Today we have a special guest, Heidi Meinzer, who is an attorney and a dog trainer, and we've invited her to do a two-part episode with us. Today, the first part is focusing on just general things that all dog owners should know about legal issues related to dogs. So, Heidi, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got into this?
Sure. Like many trainers, I had a dog who, and still have her, who challenged me and got me to learning all about training and behavior, Sophie Shepherd. I've had her about 9 years, and about 7 years ago, having a crisis moment and led me down to ultimately getting my CPDT, KSA, and CNWI. And I've been practicing law for about 17 years. I started as a public defender, went into civil litigation with a firm, and at the firm started getting enough animal law cases that it built up to being able to start my own practice about 4 years ago.
Okay. Very cool.
That is very cool. So, when you're talking about general and animal law, is there something in particular that you think every dog owner ought to know in relationship to their dog and the law? Is there something that springs to mind that might be sort of across all states?
I think that just in general, who's responsible for what is the big thing, and I'm sure we'll get more into that in the second podcast, but you know, that you ultimately, if you're going to have a dog, you have certain responsibilities that come with that, and that you've just got to be conscientious and aware, and you know, even though your dog might be perfectly fine off-leash right by your side, it just might not be what you want to do. just that you are ultimately always responsible for your dog and to your dog.
And that's an interesting distinction, isn't it? The to-your dog piece of really setting your dog up for success and making sure that we're not putting our dogs into uncomfortable situations.
Correct.
So how do you find, do you find yourself combining your training with your legal advice? Are those compatible?
Definitely. Or? I'll get phone calls from, you know, a rescue or shelter who will have a dog. And, you know, they will talk through, and it ends up being more of a counseling session necessarily than a legal session about a particular dog and what to do. Or, you know, an owner may call me. In my dangerous dog cases, a lot of times I can see things from a different perspective than somebody who's just an attorney who doesn't have behavior background or training background. So I definitely tap into the training as I do the legal piece of it. And vice versa.
Well, my husband is an attorney, and I had a friend who was getting a divorce, and she said, he's getting all this advice. And I said, do you like your attorney? And she said, yes. And I said, they are called counselors for a reason. Yeah. Follow the counsel of your attorney. Yes. And don't pay attention to Uncle Bob or, you know, your neighbor two houses down. They are not your counselor. So I always kind of appreciate that about attorneys, that you do spend a lot of time counseling, and that's why you're called, you know, counselors. So my question is, where do you get most of your phone calls from? Are they from rescues and shelters, or are you getting that from individual people?
A mixture, and businesses. So, you know, I'll get the doggy daycare who has an incident or who just wants to beef up their contract. So I get a wide mixture of people from internet traffic, from referrals, from different posts I have online and different things, quite a mixture.
Do you only do Virginia, or do you do businesses in other places?
So I'm barred in Virginia, Maryland, D.C., and oddly enough, Washington State, which is a story in and of itself. So if there's something active in court, of course, I'm bound to those jurisdictions. But if I'm reviewing a contract or something, I feel comfortable enough, I will tell somebody in California, if I do their contract, please make sure with a California attorney I didn't miss something. But because I have very particular expertise with dog training and dog business, I will do transactional things for other states too.
Well, that's kind of cool. So you can kind of do the baseline version and just have somebody tweak the edges if needed. But
right.
Then we at least know you've got the dog specific knowledge in there.
Exactly. Like some things, for instance, California, I know they don't like one-sided attorney provisions, attorney fees provisions. So you could do it in Virginia. It's the big boy rule of, look, you signed it, you read it. Only one side gets attorney's fees. Other states are more, have more policy issues. They don't like those types of provisions. So it is important to check with attorneys wherever you are and make sure you're compliant.
I have a question that I heard something years ago, and I don't know if it's true, but it makes such good sense. I have actually passed it on, so you can straighten me out if I'm wrong. I have heard that if you have a dog who has some concerns, you are probably better off having a sign on your yard that says something like dog on premises or dog in yard than beware of dog. Because beware of dog could imply, I think my dog is dangerous, whereas the other signs would say, just there is a living creature in this yard, don't let it out. Is that true? Is that something that we should be careful of, the wording of signs on our fences?
This is such a good question. I get that question a lot. And I think you certainly can't go wrong to say dog on premises or, you know, dog in the yard. And I think that beware of dog signs can cut both ways. And it just depends. Because on one hand, you know, if you got sued civilly, could they say, well, beware of dog, you knew your dog had a propensity. But on the other hand, you can argue back, look, you knew it and you assumed the risk and came into my yard anyways. So I tell people, do what you feel comfortable with. If you would rather say it, beware, don't come. You know, that can cut both ways for sure.
That's a good point.
When you're dealing with contracts, that's mostly with businesses, correct? So
correct.
When you're dealing with individual families, what kind of things do you want them to be aware of as to what their legal risk is? I mean, like, I think most people think that most dogs get a one bite rule, and I'm not sure that that's true in most states anymore. So for the general family, what do you think they need to be aware of as dog owners?
Yeah, that going back to, you know, you're responsible to and for your dog. So there's a level of care that most people are going to meet very easily. That you need to provide for your dog. But then there's also a level of care you need to provide to the rest of the world as to your dog. And, you know, there are things like leash laws and other things for a reason that, again, just because your dog may be, in your eyes, the perfect dog and nothing will ever happen, it is way better to be extra cautious. And you're right about the one free bite rule. So even in Virginia, most states have gotten rid of the one free bite and have done something like, you're gonna be, if you have a dog, you're gonna be found negligent if the dog bites unless you meet provocation or some defense. Different variations of that idea. And even here in Virginia, where we do still have the one free bite in the civil liability world, if someone's gonna sue you for money, you don't get one free bite for a dangerous dog case. So they're two totally different things. So the state could still come at you and try to declare your dog dangerous for the very first bite, even if that person who was bitten or whose dog was bitten wouldn't necessarily prevail in a civil case against you. Your dog could still be deemed dangerous, even for that first bite. Just pretend like it's not there, even if it is. I guess is the best way. Be extra cautious, you know. The Murphy's Law, if anything can go wrong, pretend like it will and just plan for it.
So what do you think about some of the issues people have had with their homeowner's insurance, where either specific breeds of dogs or a dog has had an issue in the past? Does that ever fall into the cases that you handle? How do you deal with any of that?
For sure. There are some companies like State Farm who are really good about not worrying about the breed restrictions and worrying about the particular dog. So definitely check your homeowner's insurance. Definitely check if there's any breed restrictions and support those companies who don't worry about that. And there are, now that there are more and more dangerous dog laws and more dangerous dog proceedings, There is special insurance you can get if you do have a dog who already has a ding on their record. So you can still get insurance for that. There's no doubt that plaintiff's attorneys are aware now that that is a bell to be rung. And you want to make sure you are covered on the insurance side. So a lot of states have been looking at the breed restrictions in the laws, and a lot of the states that had breed restrictions have seen that their bite statistics haven't gone down, stayed flat, or even maybe gone up. We have great data here in Virginia where we can see, because shelters and rescues have to report, and one of the things they report every year is bite statistics and who comes in for quarantines. And we have had language in our dangerous dog statute for a long time that says no dog shall be deemed dangerous based on breed alone. So we don't have breed discriminatory laws in Virginia. And our bite statistics and quarantine statistics are going down, which is great. So people are really seeing now that you've got to look at the individual dog and the individual circumstances to make a decision as to what to do, whether to find a dog dangerous. And we can prove in Virginia that that works much better than just doing breed restrictions.
Just so valuable, because it's amazing how many people think that you can do it by breed. And anyone who actually knows dogs knows that's ridiculous.
Right.
Absolutely not the case.
So has there been any kind of a study published that shows what's going on in Virginia that shows that these statistics are true? Because I'm thinking if anybody wants to approach their own state legislature, it would be nice to have that kind of information. Is that available someplace readily for somebody to take a look at?
It is. There's no study yet that I know of, but we do have more than 10 years of data at this point. And the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services in Virginia, you can go in and look at all of the statistics for all of the intake and disposition for individual shelters and rescues, as well as overall by shelters, by rescues, or overall in Virginia. I think right now online you can go back 6 or 7 years. But I think you can get your hands on data older than that if you need it.
Is that something you could help us find a link for so we could put in our show notes?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we will put that in our show notes then, in case anyone is interested and would like to go check that out. So what do you like best about your practice of focusing on animal law?
I think when I do a lot of different things, and I come in, you know, a lot of emergencies. Oh my gosh, but I like doing things on the front end as much as I can. I think that's the most satisfying thing. For instance, a lot of times I'll do ownership disputes where boyfriend, girlfriend, or roommates or whatever get a dog and they don't spell out in the front and who is owning the dog and who paid for the dog, who's going to care for the dog.
I would think it would come up a lot.
Right. And so I just had a young couple who broke up and who did it right the first time and came and got a custody agreement because, you know, a court is not going to entertain custody for a dog. Somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose because they're still under the law of property.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come together and make a contract and agree to it, then the court will honor the contract. So they did it right and did a custody agreement. And then things happened, circumstances changed, and they moved on and ended up, my client ultimately got full ownership of the dog. And we just adjusted and made it a bill of sale instead of a custody agreement. But those are the funnest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems to me that would be really interesting. In fact, one of the things that we did when we, being an attorney, it's kind of like being the wife of a cobbler. If I didn't have any shoes. It was our 10-year anniversary. My husband said, "What do you want for your anniversary?" I said, "A valid will." So we went. So we went and got a will. And one of the things that we both insisted on, we're sitting down in front of the attorney, is a clause for the care of the dogs, so that they are taken care of in our will. And the client, and he just looked at me and I said, "Do I need to name a guardian, or is just the executor of the will going to be the guardian?" So we ended up, I don't remember, but I think we might have actually named a guardian and set a certain amount of money aside for the care and maintenance of these dogs. So I think that's also something to think about, too, not just a custody agreement, but if you're making out your will, what are you going to do about your pets, whether they're dogs, cats, horses, whatever? So
now I'm feeling like a bad person because I'm pretty sure in my will it doesn't say anything. So, well, gosh, that'll be fun. Guess what we're going to do now, Jack? Update the wills.
Well, lucky my new attorney is a client of mine, actually. He loved dogs, so he didn't. That one did not bat an eye when we went to update the will. So you do animal law. Do you do other animals as well? Do you do cats and horses? And
I've had some cat cases. I typically, for horses, there are great attorneys, especially, you know, here in Virginia and Maryland, right. There are great attorneys who really specialize in equine law. So I have good contacts and I will funnel people to those folks because the equine law stuff can be quite involved. But I have certainly, especially cats, mostly companion animals are the issues that I deal with. Yeah.
Have you had any snakes or lizards or anything that is a companion, but not one that I consider companionable because I'm terribly biased toward fur?
Like frog law?
I don't think I have. Birds. I think I've been consulted about for some birds.
Birds are a big issue because so many of them are so long lived. The African, parrot, the African gray can live like 50, 60 years. I did have a client who had frogs. I was a frog sitter for a while. I'm kind of thinking the frogs weren't in the will though, and there wasn't going to be a dispute over the frog. But yeah, lizard law, frog law. Yay! You know, you might have a whole new business model to go here, Heidi, if you want to go into amphibians and reptile law.
Would seem like you might still have ownership disputes over who gets the boa constrictor, you know?
Certainly could.
Not in my house.
So when you say that you want to make sure people are responsible to and for their pet, what are, like, is there one thing, like, if you could just tell everybody this one thing, is there anything like that? What would that be?
Think of everybody around you, basically. How many times, you know, my Sophie is very space sensitive German Shepherd, and how many times you get that, don't worry, he's friendly, and mm-hmm. you know, that's might be all well and good for your dog, but my dog needs some space. You know, so just be conscientious. Don't be my lab. Be more like, give me space. Just pretend like everybody's got the red bandana on. And
so one other legal question that I have, and I don't know if this is fairly universal or not, but in the, for example, I have a client who is considering rehoming their dog. And well, I actually have two clients right now. One of whom the dog has had no aggressive incidences. So I don't think rehoming is much of an issue, just finding the right match for this particular dog. On the other hand, I have another one who's had several aggressive incidents, including bites. Now, is there a legal liability for the people who rehome a dog that has a bite history if they don't fully disclose, or even if they do fully disclose?
Yes. So this is what I say. Your biggest exposure liability wise is failing to disclose. If you, and I've done it before where I've had a bill of sale or something where we fully disclose everything and the dog is rehomed to a much better place for the dog, but not a more appropriate place, let's say. And as long as it's fully disclosed, for the most part, the legal liability is going to pass to the new owner, and you are typically not going to be held responsible. But if you fail to disclose, that's where you're going to get yourself into trouble. So that's, I tell my rescues and shelters and anyone who's going to rehome a dog that very thing: disclose, get it in writing, share as much information as you can, and make it as informed a choice as you can. Because if you're holding back information, there's a reason you're doing it, and you need to be asking yourself why and where you're rehoming if that's what you're doing.
Right. That's a really good point. So putting on your dog trainer hat for a minute, this is something I've struggled with, is that sometimes people don't understand the information they're receiving. So information was disclosed. Somebody told them, this is what you're going to, this is what you've got. This is what you'll, what that looks like, you know, in your life. This is what that will look like. And they don't really understand that. As a dog trainer, have you found any way to help people reconcile the picture in their head with the picture that they thought they understood? I mean, you know, they knew they were getting a special needs baby, but they thought a little bit of love was going to fix it all.
Right. That's a really good question. And I think in this case, you know, when you're talking about disclosing some background, I think that having actual information will help. You know, maybe there was an animal control report and photographs and other things. And I would hand over all that stuff. Maybe a veterinarian or a behaviorist or a trainer did a summary with actual, you know, I think about Dr. Susan Friedman, who's always saying, don't use labels, describe, 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 and painting a picture rather than saying, this is what you're getting and putting a label on it. Just actual details. When I might in court object and say, that's an improper opinion, and the court says, you're right, tell us what you saw, tell us what you heard, describe that.
Very good question. Hey. That's very good. I was just thinking about a client who had adopted a dog and it didn't work out well. And they ended up, I helped her and we went to a behaviorist and we had this huge written report about what we saw with this dog, what had happened, the recommendations for what this dog would need in the kind of home it would need. And it was just not, it wasn't necessarily a bad dog, it was just a bad match. And we went back to the rescue. We sent them the report. I sent them a report. The behaviorist sent them a report. And they said, yes, we agree. We're going to do this. We're going to send her to our vet. The very next day, the dog was back up for adoption with no information, additional information. Is there anything that somebody could do when you say, hey, or at that point, is it just like, I've washed my hands. I've done the best that I can in order to, you know, pass on the information necessary to make this dog successful and the next adoption successful?
Well, as long as you, you know, I would just make sure that you sent in writing, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, in writing, send that on to the board of directors or wherever, just so you're sure that information got to where it needed to get to. And then at that point, you know, there are cases, you know, we just had a terrible case in the Virginia Beach Hampton Roads area here in Virginia. And I think I just saw that there was a lawsuit filed about that. So, you know, it's happening more and more now that rescues and shelters are finding themselves in the position of that liability coming back on them. And they just have to make sure that they're making the right choices by the adopters, by the dogs themselves, by the public. So, you know, it's unfortunate what happened there. And unfortunate if there is a case right now, but that's where it's going to shake out. Is, you know, accountability. I don't know how the civil case will come out. I don't know all the facts and circumstances behind it. But that is a situation you can easily find yourself in. And like I said, as long as the people in charge, the board of directors, whoever has your information, you can always say, look, I just want you to know I worked on this case. I want to make sure the board's aware so that the right people can make the right decisions.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to go into a lot more of that in detail in the next episode, but I think it's important for owners in general to understand that you are your dog's advocate. You need to advocate for your dog and for the people who are your dog may encounter, that it's your responsibility to be in full ownership of your dog and your dog's behavior. In the event that your dog needs to, because it's a mismatch, that you need to move your dog onto another home, you have to fully disclose whatever the problem is, whether that includes aggressive behaviors or not. Why is it that you are rehoming this dog so that doesn't come back and literally bite you? And I think the other thing to recognize is that most states are no longer had the one bite rule, and that insurance companies may stop your homeowner's insurance, but there are great companies out there and you need to sort of be pursuing companies perhaps that are a little bit more understanding about what dogs are all about. So is there anything else that you'd like to add for our general family dog owner that we haven't covered?
I think that covers it.
So can you tell people how they could find you and find out more about the work you do?
Certainly. So my law firm is the Law Office of Heidi Meinzer. I'm here in Alexandria, Virginia, and I do have a website. It's www.meinzerlaw.com. That's M-E-I-N-Z-E-R-L-A-W, all together. And you'll find my contact information, phone number, email, all there, all on the website.
Thanks so much for sharing all your expertise with us today, Heidi. It was really great.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.